Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and this week, just like last week, Pete Donaldson is away on holiday somewhere in the Canary Islands, battling through a volcano, I think. But in his absence, last week we had American Pete, an equally eccentric and crazy individual, and this week we've got another guest joining me today, and it is Charlotte, who's coming at a moment's notice. How are you doing, Charlotte?
Hello.
I whisked her off the streets of Sendai, because now she's in Sendai. How are you getting on?
Good. Yeah, I really like it here. I was a little worried to move here in the beginning, but I'm really happy with it. It is quite good. You weren't lying over the years.
What are the highs and lows of Sendai so far? You've been here 2 months.
The highs are definitely the assortment of food that's available.
Yeah.
It's just another world compared with Morioka, which is a much smaller town, for those of you that aren't aware. Yeah, the assortment of foreign foods and like ethnic foods is amazing, because I love curry and there's all kinds of curry here. And yeah, the food's been great. The lows, I don't really have a low. I was mostly worried about it being too city. I thought it was going to feel like Tokyo, and it really doesn't. I don't know if that's because of COVID or who knows, but it doesn't feel crowded and there's lots of trees. So yeah, so good.
City of trees.
They do.
And you've enjoyed the trees.
And the spiders.
And the spiders.
The trees.
There are a lot of spiders, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll soon be gone. They're like the really creepy green ones that are poisonous.
Apparently.
So far as I can understand.
Japanese people are really scared of them, so I avoid them at all costs. I don't know how much that fear is warranted, but better safe than sorry.
I don't know what they're called, but do you know what they're called?
No.
Just green spiders.
Green poisonous spiders.
Green poisonous spiders.
Stripy legs.
I don't know what happens if they bite you either.
No idea. Like, is it a life or death situation?
Will you explode?
Will your arms swell up?
But yeah, Sendai is nice. It's still a little bit dead because of the whole mumble restrictions where you can't do anything fun after 8 p.m. Just
right.
Like Tokyo. I'm hoping they get rid of it because it's driving me absolutely mental. But fingers crossed, we'll see what happens. This week, because Pete is away, I thought we would actually go through the fax machine. We haven't had a fax machine special in a while. Reading out your questions and your stories, guys. And also, because Pete hasn't been to Japan in about over a year now, unfortunately, because of everything going on, it's been difficult for Pete to answer some of these questions because some of his experiences in Japan have become distant. So with Charlotte here, with your... How long have you been here? 20, 30 years?
No, fuck off. 16.
16 years, right. Charlotte's been here 16 years. A world of experience to draw from. More than me. You speak the language a lot better than I do. You've met everyone famous from Japan at least once.
Lots of them. Not Ken Watanabe.
Not Ken Watanabe.
Or an even playing field there. So you meet some first.
Well, Bloody Pete last week.
I know, that's ridiculous.
Bloody Pete.
Of all people.
How did I not know that? He was like, oh yeah, by the way, I met Ken Watanabe. I'm like, what? You fucking what? Unbelievable. But you've met a lot of people.
I have.
Both Japanese and not Japanese famous. Charlotte's always like, impresses me with who she's met. You've met Jenna Marbles.
I have.
You met Poppy.
Yep.
I was going to say, you met Popeye.
Not
Popeye.
Quite.
Not Popeye yet. Who else have you met? There's someone else you amazed me with.
Oh.
You met Takashi Miike, one of... Takashi Miike?
Didn't meet him. I worked with
Worked with him. And he directed films like Audition. Who else? Someone famous, some celebrity you met.
A foreign one?
A foreign celebrity.
Who are you thinking of?
I can't remember. It might come to me later on, but I'm sure it will. Let's kick off the story, though. We've got a story here from a chap in Australia called Joel. And it's quite a cool story, especially... Well, I'll get on to that in a minute. Hi, Notorious Chris and Nutmegging Pete.
What's nutmegging?
It's like when you embarrass someone when you play football. You kick the ball through their feet and make them look stupid.
Oh, it's a football thing.
Yeah, and not some sort of weird... It sounds really wrong. Notorious Chris, Nutmegging Pete. First, thank you, Chris, for the hard work and content. Thank you very much. I've been enjoying the videos since 2017 when I was researching destinations for my first holiday to Japan. I thought I'd write to you about a recent find of mine. I've recently uncovered an old 1999 letter from my Japanese pen pal, Yukiko, from Kakumagawa in Akita Prefecture. We exchanged introductory letters when I was 14 and she was 15, as I had just started high school here in Canberra, Australia, and a Japanese was one of my classes that semester. In her neatly written letter, she mentions enjoying PlayStation, having joined the brass band at school, and the weather being very cold in Akita. She then signed off with a cute drawing of a rabbit, a panda, and a cat, and Joel was attached a photo of the letter with a... A really good rabbit and a really good panda and cat drawing. sadly, perhaps, due to my nervousness and thinking I had a poor mastery of Japanese, I neglected to reply to this letter. And reading it back now, I regret that my 14-year-old self didn't have the courage to reply. Joel, how could you?
Poor Akiko.
You're sitting there waiting.
Yeah. For how many years?
Waited like 20 years now.
22 years.
Chris, I wanted to ask you, a long-time resident of Tohoku, for your thoughts on this. I've read that Akita Prefecture has some of the highest rates of depopulation and migration in anywhere in Japan. Looking at Google Maps at Yukiko's apartment or house, I guess it'd be fairly likely she moved somewhere in the two decades since. However, what do you think the odds are?
Oh, Yumiko.
Yumiko.
I said Akiko.
Sorry. Yukiko. He spelled it three different ways. He's forgotten her name. I guess she's moved somewhere. However, do you think her parents still live there in the town? Mm. I'm obviously not in a position to visit the town and ask, but I was thinking of perhaps copying her letter and writing a much belated, that's an understatement, thank you reply and posting it to her. Because at worst, if the residents there aren't her family, whoever it is would probably find some amusement in receiving a reply to a letter from 1999. Or do you think it might be a better idea to send it to the nearby municipal office or post office instead? And they can forward it on. Thank you, guys. Best wishes for the rest of 2021. Joel from Canberra in Australia. That's a really interesting one. What do you think, Charlotte?
Oh, I think you should definitely send a reply.
Mm.
I would bet that there's at least one family member still living at that address because it's not very common for a Japanese family to sell off their family home.
That's true.
The daughter may have moved to a bigger city. That would be, you know, expected. But I bet the parents are still there.
Yeah.
And even if they aren't, there might be some kind of mail forwarding service that they've set up. They do have things like that in Japan. So the letter could make it to somebody in the family if you do send it to that address. Yeah, I would definitely try.
I do think there's probably a 60 to 70% chance her parents still live there.
Mm.
Because people don't move much in Akita, right? And... I imagine she doesn't live in Akita, because most young people...
I bet she doesn't, no.
Yeah.
But I bet the parents are there.
She could be here in Sendai.
Yeah.
She could be
listening to this podcast.
Could have walked down the street. Well, she might be. Her English was quite good on the letter.
It was very good.
Dear Joel, I enjoyed reading your letter very much. I'm very happy to have you as my pen friend. I was born on June 14th, 1985. I am 1 year younger than you. I like PlayStation. I'm very happy to know that we have the same hobby. I like music, listen, and playing. I join a brass band. What do you copy? The weather here in Akita is very cold. Australia, is it cold or warm? This is like really grammatically good. Like, this is way better than any of my students.
It's better than your English.
It's probably better than my bloody English. I think
it's very good, yeah.
Do message her though, Joel, and let us know how you get on.
Put like your email address or something so she can easily reply to you if she does get the letter.
I Funnily enough, this town, it's in a really remote part of Akita, but I actually drove through it, I think, 3 or 4 months ago while doing a video. And it's, yeah, it's weird to think.
It's near Daizen. He said, yeah, I've been down there too.
Isn't that where you did your homestay?
One of them, yeah.
One of them?
Well, yeah, my original homestay was in Iwate.
Ah, right.
But then I did a video at my homestay in Akita. So yeah, it's probably really close by. It's a really nice area.
Beautiful. Bloody snowy and cold in winter, though. You could call us right about that. But good luck, Joel. Let us know how you get on. Once you've sent it, and if you get a reply or not, yeah, let us know what happens. I'd love to hear. So we'll dive into the fax machine now. Read your questions, guys. We've got one here from Nick to kick us off. Nick from the USA. It says, hi, Pete and Chris. I've been loving the podcast and had a question. As someone planning a first-time trip to Japan, what sort of travel or activity limits would you suggest for first-time travellers to Japan? Activity limits. What does that mean? Especially ones going alone and with limited Japanese. Should I stick to main cities and touristy spots for now, or avoid unplanned excursions into weird places? I find I have a habit of pushing myself, being overly optimistic when planning how much I can do in a given time and underestimating how difficult things could be. So what are some things, what are some ways an overly enthusiastic traveller like myself could still enjoy Japan without winding up in a bad situation far from anyone who can speak English? Have either of you done anything similar? Cheers, guys. Nick from the USA. What do you think? Activity limits.
Two things to address here. One, should he go out into obscure locations with limited Japanese? And two, how much should he cram into a short time?
Right, yeah.
I always suggest to people not to cram in too many locations into your trip, because it's always nice to have like enough time to genuinely enjoy a place and not keep looking at your watch like, oh, I gotta go catch a train in 2 hours to leave here.
That's a good point.
So I would be like generous with the amount of time you dedicate to each location. As for like wandering off into obscure places, I would say there's probably some like medium ground that you could cover without feeling too out of your depth. Like, other than Tokyo and Kyoto and Osaka, like the three main ones that everyone goes to, there's other cities like maybe Kamakura would be a really nice place for you to explore. That's not like, you know, top on everyone's first things to do in Japan list. Or come up to Sendai or Morioka for something a bit more off the beaten path, but still a city. So there'll be people around if you need help. I wouldn't say to totally avoid things other than Tokyo or Kyoto. That would be a waste, really.
I mean, maybe just don't go off into like the mountains on a bicycle alone.
Exactly.
I don't like doing things like that, traveling alone. Our friend Quinlan goes up like mountains every day.
He does.
Go north
Japan. He's not exaggerating. He's up there every day.
He goes up the mountains every day alone. It's like he meets bears, he crosses waterfalls. He's got a great channel called Go North Japan. That what he does is over the limit. It's past the limit. That is the limit.
Past the activity limit.
Don't do what Quinlan does unless you've got balls. I say it's a fair point. But just don't do too much stuff unless you've got a reason for doing it. Like you want to take a photo of every prefecture in Japan or something. Just be careful not to do exactly what Charlotte did. Or said.
What did I do?
What you said. We got one here. Dear Captain Chris and Petey Pirate. It's a very known fact for all the abroad Japan fans that in Japan, Christmas is not that big celebrated in Japan than in most other countries. And also that Valentine's Day is celebrated big time. Here in the Netherlands, we have a thing called Sinterklaas. How's that pronounced?
Sinterklaas?
Sinterklaas. You're half Dutch, aren't you?
I am.
How do you say Sinterklaas?
I don't speak it. It'd be Sinterklaas.
Sinterklaas, also known as St. Nicholas, which is celebrated on a big scale. It's kind of similar to Christmas, and the guy really looks a lot like Santa, who went on a diet. My question, what are the biggest celebrated special days and holidays in Japan? Love the podcast, guys. Keep up the good work. Sem from Rotterdam, the Netherlands. Lots of big holidays in Japan. We've just had Silver Week here, which is a holiday that I didn't even know existed. Basically, there's like three different holidays scattered around the week, and everyone just takes the whole week off, and it's just been chaos in Sendai.
It has.
There's Obon in August, which is another week off. There's Golden Week in May, which is another week off. There's a New Year's holiday in January, which I can't remember the name of. What's it called?
お正月. It's literally just New Year's.
Just New Year's holiday. There is quite a lot of stuff, and Christmas isn't one of them, no. Unfortunately.
New Year's is the biggest one. I would say, like, if Christmas is the biggest celebrated holiday in your country, New Year's would be the equivalent of that in Japan.
It's not a good time to come here either, because for 5 or 6 days, everything's shut.
Even like essential services.
The only thing open is like convenience stores and McDonald's, and that's not a way to spend a holiday. But yeah, I'd say those are the biggest holidays. Obon's kind of cool. It's where...
Obon is really interesting.
Your relatives come back from the afterlife to wander around your house, basically.
You kind of like welcome them back by doing these different rituals. And they come back to visit you, and you... Yeah, I made a video on it ages ago. I should do a good one.
It's a bit like, it's a bit like the movie Hereditary. Who's seen that film?
It's nothing like the movie Hereditary.
That's exactly what Obon
is. Don't listen to him. Why do you have a podcast about Japan? Stop teaching them these things.
It's a strange old holiday. And because I've always felt left out of Obon, because I don't have any relatives in Japan.
Of course.
Who are dead.
I was invited to celebrate it with my friend when I lived down in Chiba.
How is it actually celebrated then? People just go to shrines and they light candles in their house?
The best part is they make animals out of vegetables. For example, like they'll take a nasu, like an eggplant, and they'll put sticks in it to make legs, and it'll be a horse.
It's genuinely Hereditary.
And then stop it.
See,
oh my
hereditary.
God, it is. Yeah, you're right.
Didn't the girl do that?
Yeah. Okay, but... And then that animal is supposed to be like the vehicle for your relative to ride from the afterlife.
The asparagus.
The nasu. Eggplant.
The eggplant, right.
You can use several different vegetables, but I think that's the most commonly used one. And then, yeah, you light lanterns and you carry them with you to the gravesite as a way to guide the spirit back, I guess. I'm not 100% sure. I did make a really bad video about it years ago. I think I might have explained it better there. If you're curious, search for Obon Sharla. It might show up.
Obon Sharla.
But yeah, it's a really, really interesting holiday because we don't have anything like that in Canada. England doesn't have a day like that either.
I'd say it's easily the most interesting Japanese holiday.
Definitely.
Yeah. We got one here from Trevor from San Diego. Hello, carnivorous Chris and brave... Saw here, Pete. My name's Trevor, and I'm from San Diego. In a recent episode of the podcast, you mentioned cooking Japanese food. My girlfriend and I absolutely love Japanese food and Asian food in general. We like to cook, and there's one dish that eluded me for the longest time, tonkotsu ramen, which is pork broth ramen. It is by far our favourite dish, and thankfully, San Diego has many ramen shops that are all amazing. But being the home cook I am, I wanted to make it myself. So, I studied many recipes. People like Binging with Babish and Joshua Weissman. But one stood out from the pack, the Way of Ramen Channel. The host, I think at least, taught how to make ramen so well, even Chris could do it. It's about that. very optimistic.
Very optimistic.
I made the broth. It had tare, aroma oil, marinated eggs, the best thing, I might add, and pork belly, which I let marinate overnight. Basically everything besides the noodles. It was amazing. It wasn't the best ramen I've ever had. I was impressed, however, by just how good this homemade ramen broth was. And my question for you guys is, will you try to make tonkotsu ramen yourself? Chris, if you made a broad in a pan and made something as complicated as ramen, even if it turns out shit, people will watch that video. It may even surpass the video where you reviewed McDonald's chocolate fries. Signed, Trevor from San Diego. Have you ever cooked anything ramen-like?
I made ramen from scratch once.
Wow.
It's probably the hardest thing I've ever made. It's a process, a very long process, as I'm sure Trevor knows.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor had a very long email, actually. I had to cut it down a little bit, and he went into detail on how he cooked it. And it was really quite interesting, but it just seemed incredibly complex.
It's so complex.
Like, nobody in Japan... I've never gone around a friend's house and they've gone, oh, I've made some ramen.
No, no one ever makes it from scratch.
No.
You can buy, like, the pre-made broth at the grocery store and then maybe add in the pieces yourself, buy the noodles separate, buy the negi separate, etc. But nobody ever makes it from scratch.
It's just... like the best places to go for ramen are family restaurants or family shops,
definitely,
that have been making it for years. Mm. Their, you know, their grandparents made the recipe, they've passed it down. Yeah. It's a real family secret. The best ramen shops are absolutely not the chain restaurants, they're the ones that are family run.
Mm.
And there's a really good town I want to revisit that I went to with Ryotaro many years ago called Kitakata. Which, you know, yeah, Fukushima, the town that's famous for having the most ramen shops per capita.
It's ridiculous,
isn't
it?
Anywhere in Japan, yeah.
How many are there?
Just so many.
Like over 100 or something, isn't it? Like, it's ridiculous.
It's like 50, maybe? 50 to 100?
Oh, is that it? Still, though, that's a lot.
Well, it's not like a city,
though. It's not a large town, is it?
It's mental. You drive down the street, and it's just like, ramen here, ramen here.
Yeah.
And they've got, like, a tourist centre in the middle of the town, and they have a big wall covered in every single ramen shop and sort of what they do and what their specialty is.
Neat.
Really great. I'd love to go back. I recommend checking out that video if you're interested in this town. We did a video, I think the video is called Japan's Ramen Capital, and that video came out in 2017, I want to say. But it's a good video. Highly recommend checking it out.
Mm.
But no, in summary, Trevor, I won't be making ramen. I could barely cook it.
You need to tone down the level a bit.
I mean, what can I cook? Guess. Chicken?
What can you cook?
Chicken.
Can you cook chicken?
I can cook chicken.
I've never seen you cook chicken.
I will cook chicken.
Lies.
Chicken ramen. I'll get a bowl
chicken
of
ramen.
Hot water. I'll pan fry the chicken. Chuck it in.
Oh, gosh.
Bit of salt and pepper. Job
Stop
done.
Stop it. That sounds so bad.
I'll get some cup noodles and take the dried noodles out and just plonk them in. And then leave that to marinate overnight.
Oh,
and,
gosh.
And there's a brawn Japan ramen.
Leave it to marinate.
It's going to be great. Definitely going to do that. We're in the studio recording right now, by the way, guys, and there is a kitchen in the studio, as you'll see in the upcoming tour in a few weeks. What do you think of the studio's kitchen, Charlotte?
It's a little underwhelming.
How dare you?
It's not like you're going to use it, though.
Come into my studio and mock my kitchen setup. I've got a grill.
Burner?
Gas burner, and the gas isn't connected. So I like to cook exclusively with my own imagination. We've got one here from Rachel and Tash from Bournemouth. And the email is titled, Monster Ramen and Lesbianism.
What a great title.
Love it. My favourite things. Hey, Chris and Pete. My wife and I have travelled to a few places where we have deemed it safer to pretend to just be friends. I can't seem to get a clear answer on whether Japan is one of these places, and it seems to be a don't ask, don't tell culture. We would rather not hide our marriage for obvious reasons, but are willing to do so if it's safer. Many thanks for your help you can provide, Rachel and Tash from Bournemouth. Also, can you order a monster ramen to share, or is it a one person, one monster ramen kind of deal? We really want to do it, but there's no way we could finish one each. Rachel and Tash, I would just not order the monster ramen. It's not good.
It's not good.
I've had it twice, and it's just worse each time.
It looks so bad.
So I had it with Joey earlier this year, and then I had it with Natsuki like 3 or 4 years ago, and it's just shit. Like, it's more bean sprouts than ramen. Like, it's just bean sprouts. And I don't go there, Rachel. Go somewhere. Go to Kitakata, the aforementioned Kitakata.
Yeah.
As to, you know, whether being lesbian in Japan would be a problem, I don't think it'd be a problem. I did go into a love hotel recently with Connor, Sea Dog VA. We were in Osaka for one of our wacky weekend trips, and we went into 5 love hotels, and 2 of those love hotels rejected us for being 2 guys.
That's common with love hotels.
It was really shit. We went in, we pressed.
I was shocked.
You go into like the lobby, and you just got like a, you basically have like 10 different rooms, and then you press the button for which room you want, and then you get a key or whatever, and then you go into the lift. But as we were heading towards the elevator to go up to the room, some guy just came out of like a hole in the wall, and he was like, no, futari danse dame, like, two guys no good, literally.
Mm.
And that was that. And I should have queried it, because there was a really interesting article in The Guardian.
Yeah, you really should have asked why.
Well, there was a really interesting article in The Guardian that came out earlier this year saying a lot of Japan's love hotels are basically homophobic. Mm-hmm. And it's illegal to do that. It's illegal to turn away customers on that basis.
Is it? In Japan?
You're not allowed to do it.
I'm actually surprised they have a law.
I'm surprised. They don't enforce it, though, clearly.
Of course they
don't. But, like, Honestly, absolute joke. I was so angry.
Yeah, that happened to me before. I tried to film a video with my female friend at a love hotel. Yeah, we went through maybe three of them before we got someone who would accept us.
Oh, really?
For the night, yeah.
So we had it in the sort of opposite direction. So we were sort of lulled into a false sense of security. Went to the first three hotels we went to.
Oh,
wasn't
okay.
a problem.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, maybe they've...
Seems maybe 50-50.
Well, yeah, that we thought, oh, I've dropped this rule in Osaka. Maybe we don't, you know. And then we went those two and it ruined that. But Connor's going to put that in the video. While we were doing it, he very sneakily filmed it with the GoPro. And so you can see the guy coming up being like, no. Huh. So that's the only situation, though. If you want to go to a love hotel, you might get rejected.
Yeah, honestly, you don't need to worry about your safety. Like, don't worry about hiding it if you're worried about safety reasons. That's not going to be a problem. You guys can totally, like, hold hands or... tell people you're married. It's not going to be an issue.
No.
The only thing I can really think of is the love hotels. And sometimes if you're trying to get an apartment here, you would want to hide it because there's also places that will turn you down.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
When you're renting an apartment. But those are the
stupid.
Really the only two situations I can think that you'd have to be a little secretive about it. Otherwise, if you're just traveling here, yeah, don't worry. Yeah.
I'm just amazed how few people I've met from the LGBT community in Japan. People do really keep it on the down low. I find they either keep it down low and don't say anything about it, or they're very extroverted about it. It's the extreme.
Yeah.
And like, that's the only time. But like, it's far rarer than the UK. I guess just because it's still not overly well received here, or people just worry about how it'll be received.
Well, I think just because people have hidden it for so long that people don't feel as comfortable coming out here. So that's why it seems like there's way less of a community. But I think it's getting better.
It is getting better.
Slowly.
I think last year there was a district in Tokyo that allowed gay couples to get married.
Yeah.
So that was a step in the right direction.
Like actual marriage, right? Finally.
Yeah.
They've had like a civil partnership thing. A few places have allowed that. But I think, maybe Shibuya?
It might be Shibuya,
Recognize... marriage fully, and so that's great.
And the good thing is Shibuya is a bit of a trendsetter, so hopefully it might catch on. But other than that, Rachel and Tash, I don't think it'll be too much of an issue. I really don't think it'll stop you from enjoying your holiday. The only thing that will stop you, of course, is if you eat Monster Ramen. You will regret that for at least 3 days afterwards. I'd love to go to Bournemouth, by the way. I hope it's nice in sunny Bournemouth in the UK, southern coast.
Oh,
it's quite nice. I've never been there. Want to go.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is Raimi. I'm an old-time YouTube and podcast faithful follower of the Abroad in Japan movement. You made it sound, like a cult, Raimi. I moved to Israel from Argentina 8 years ago. So your story is about how hard it can be to adapt to Japan, not just the new language, but also to the thinking process of a new culture. It's always resonated with me, so thank you for sharing that. My story goes like this. Visiting Japan was a lifelong dream of mine that I fulfilled a couple of years ago, and I loved every minute of the insanely packed 2-week itinerary that I did with my wife, going from Kanazawa to Kyoto, Osaka and Tokyo. It was all unforgettable, but of all the memories, there's one awkward situation I had the first day that keeps coming back to my mind. After landing at Narita Airport, we took the train to Tokyo and then a bullet train to Kanazawa. We arrived at a beautiful snow-covered city and took a bus to the hotel. The bus was full, so my wife and I ended sitting pretty far away from each other. Soon after I sat down, the guy sitting next to me got off the bus, and for the next 45 minutes, the seat next to me was empty. The seat next to me was the only empty seat on this packed bus, with everyone else just standing up. I would have had my wife sitting next to me, but she was on the far side of the sea of the salary men and couldn't walk over. I'm a chief sergeant in the Navy, green eyes, blonde hair, fit, big guy. Is it normal for people to prefer standing for 45 minutes instead of sitting next to a foreigner? The question stayed unanswered for years, so I hope you can finally help me. Keep up the great work, guys. All the best. From Raimi. That's an interesting point there. What do you think of that? What do you make of that, Charlotte?
Well, to answer your question, yes, it's very common for that to happen. So it wasn't just a one-off case in your situation. It's happened to me as a girl here many times. I actually made a video about it, and I got both sides, answers. I had lots of Japanese people respond to it by saying, I would say the majority said it's because they're worried that you will talk to them in a language they can't understand. So they're nervous to sit next to you because they don't want that situation. They don't want to have to deal with that situation.
Yeah, people here, they don't like to really interact with strangers much while doing things in public.
Right.
And it's every Japanese person's worst nightmare, I think, from what I understand. You know, the idea that they're coming home after a long day's work, whatever, and then there's a foreigner that sits next to them, and then they're worried that, oh God, maybe they're going to ask me how to get from X to Y, and I'm going to have an awkward conversation. Yeah. Like, people get very awkward here about that sort of thing. Very anxious about
the right word.
Sudden and surprising interactions outside of the norm. It's a high uncertainty avoidance culture, which basically means any uncertainty is
avoided at all costs.
Is avoided, and it's very stressful, you know, to have
so they'd rather stand than sit next to you and risk that situation occurring.
It's definitely, you know, it happens to me like once a week. It happens on underground trains, it happens on buses. It happens very often. The first few times it happened, I did think, oh, this is very xenophobic. Baby likes me. What's going on? But then once you understand Japanese culture and the Japanese mindset and that it's a high uncertainty avoidance culture, which can be hard to do, you know, it can be hard to do.
Yeah, it's so different.
Unless you're a kind of introverted person naturally who's kind of anxious or something. Like, I think it can be hard to get into that mindset, but I get it now. And I don't feel kind of angry when it happens. I just think it's kind of ridiculous, though.
It is ridiculous. That's a culture that we can't really understand because that's not how we were raised.
But you do feel a sense of guilt. I've sat on a train where everyone's standing for so long and there's just a nice big empty, nice big juicy empty seat just next to me. It's sitting there, it's perfectly great, and nobody will sit there. The train could be overflowing. There's people being pushed on with fucking sticks at the train station. Literally, there's people at stations in Tokyo that push you on with a stick. And if you're, you know, people just won't sit next to you. But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's the way it'll probably always be. I don't see that changing anytime soon. But
reading the comments on my video did put me at ease a bit. I felt like it wasn't like a sign of aggression towards foreigners or anything.
No, it's not.
It's definitely just a case of they're worried you're going to talk to them and they're not going to understand and it's going to be awkward. I would say 8 out of 10 times that's the reason, probably.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, really. We always talk about on this podcast how friendly Japanese people are. And they are incredibly friendly once you strike up a conversation and have a chat. But getting to that point can often be very difficult. I find people here, particularly in the north where we live, people here just don't want to strike up a conversation that much.
No, it's rare to find somebody who's excited about talking to a stranger.
But I remember when I was on journey across Japan, in the sort of the west side of Japan, past Osaka, and you know, you've got places like Hiroshima or Kagoshima. That side of Japan, people do come and talk to you a lot more.
Yeah, I
remember
say in
you
general,
in Kagoshima.
That's true.
When you were in Kagoshima, doing some filming. Lots of people, you told me lots of people came up to meet you on the day where you went and did something and walked off. You told me that some strangers came and talked to you.
Don't remember.
Well.
But I can agree that in general, that side of Japan is definitely more open to just talking with people.
Must be something to do with the weather because it's a lot warmer that side of Japan and people are outdoorsy.
Yeah, just a more open community oriented culture down there, I guess. Whereas up here people maybe keep to themselves more. There are certainly really friendly people up here as well, but they're few and far between.
I don't know what the phrase is I'm looking for, because everybody is friendly. Again, if you start talking, it'll be wonderful and brilliant.
I don't know.
Reserved.
If there's a phrase. Reserved.
Super incredibly hyper reserved.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem. And I've talked about it in the past, but I think that can be a real issue when it comes to making friends here. That's a story for another
day. But that's not everyone, though. Like, I've had some really good experiences with people up here in Tohoku. Like, I don't want to say that they're unfriendly, because they're very nice once you talk to them. It's just that, they're a little... they're just not used to talking to strangers, I guess. It's just as much.
I think the takeaway is, if you come north of Tokyo and you're out and about walking around, just don't expect people to just strike up a conversation with you. I remember I was in the Bahamas once. I'd say the Bahamas is the friendliest culture on earth. Walk down the street, everyone, every stranger, every person said hello.
That'd be such a culture shock if I went there after living in Japan for 16 years.
It's wonderful. I think the UK is somewhere in the middle, if not more towards Japan than
Canada
the Bahamas.
Too. It always throws me off when I go home and a stranger is like, oh, nice day today, isn't it? It takes me a while to respond because I'm like shocked that somebody's talking to me.
I like that though. I like that.
Yeah, it's nice.
I do miss that a bit. Just speaking to people on the street walking by. Yeah. I'm like, oh, good morning.
Yeah.
Alas. Japan makes up for it in other ways. It's still a great country. Thank you, guys, for all your stories, comments, questions this week. Please keep them coming. And thank you, Sharla, for stopping by and replacing Pete Donaldson.
You're welcome. Hopefully I did a decent job.
You did a decent job indeed. And Pete Donaldson will return once more later in the week. I'm looking forward to catching up. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have a great week. And we'll see you right back here to do it all over again on the Abroad in Japan podcast. Bye for now.
Bye.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.